scheduled one for next month, but...
Have you
got
that?
Sorry?
You have.
Oh, well, I'll talk afterwards. In the meantime, I called Tom Ripley by the way.
It's just Marina, Rav Shlita. Once I was sitting down with a barrister for a working lunch and I declined eating with him, apologizing about my kosher diet, and he said to me, "Oh, are you strict?" Which nobody had ever asked me before. And then on another occasion, I was sitting down with somebody and I was asked, "Oh, are you extreme?" And it set me thinking, you know, how people see me from the outside world, because I might be immersed so much in practicing the faith. So does that mean I'm extreme? Unfortunately, the word has become a bit of a euphemism. You know, you hear on the news about Islamic extremists, whereas really they are Islamic murderers. We're not talking about murdering people here. We're just talking about the way we practice what Hashem is asking from us. So, you know, what is extreme? So when we talk about extreme, we think about maybe women wearing burqas and niqabs and hijabs. And in fact, Rabbonim have come out against women who do such things, thinking that it's sinistic to dress in such a way. No, that is not what is allowed. So what is the stereotype we talk about in extremists? Sometimes we think of somebody who's shockling a lot in his davening with a big hat and a big beard, and we tend to call that extreme. And once the Chofetz Chaim was asked, "Why is it that you don't shockle during davening?" And he waved his arms wildly in the air and he said, "If I go like this, does it mean I'm a good swimmer?" So there are different concepts which we have in our minds as to what extremism might be. And the Pasuk says, "Kadoshim tiyu, you shall be holy." And Rashi brings down Chazal, "Kadesh atzmecha b'mashe mutaloch." You know, create a balance. Make yourself holy with what's allowed to you. I mean, you are allowed to eat 5 steaks every day for breakfast. There's absolutely nothing in halacha which will stop you from doing so. But it is extreme, and you probably get colon cancer as well. Now, so what is the halachic interpretation of how we adopt the right path in life? And the classic example is the Rambam, which we'll deal with more in a minute, who talks about the middle road, that talks about what we seem to interpret as moderation. So is that what we mean? But just to start with a couple of stories about what we might mean by extremism or what is the right way in halacha, and a couple of stories come to my mind about Dayan Grunfeld, Zichrono Livracha, who was the grandfather of Rav Kohn Shlita. And Dayan Grunfeld was once asked to be the part-time minister of Finchley Park Synagogue when he came over as a refugee from Germany, and it was very hard to find work, and he was given this job. And it came to the time when he was officiating at a wedding, and the ladies of the close family turned up in an attire which was not exactly conducive to the Orthodox Jewish faith. And he felt in a halachic dilemma as to whether he would be allowed to officiate at a ceremony when people were coming along half undressed, or half dressed. So he told the family that he was unable to officiate at this chuppah because of the way they were dressed, and they said, "Well, what shall we do? We've got nothing else to wear." So he said, "Take the tablecloths which have been put out for the reception and ask the ladies to wrap themselves up in them." And that way he conducted it. Well, there was a big hoo-ha after that, a big row, and he got called in to Chief Rabbi Hertz, and he said, "Who do you think you are coming along here from Germany as a refugee telling people what to do?" So he said, "Well, you know, I have to keep to the halachic norm. I have to keep to the faith. And I'm sorry, I just felt compelled to make that request because I can't compromise on the halacha." So Rabbi Hertz said to him, "Do you realize that you could lose your job over this?" And Rabbi Grunfeld said, "Well, if that's the case, so be it. I can't help it. I have to keep to the halacha. Obviously, I'm not keen to lose my job, but I'm not going to compromise one iota when it comes to Jewish law." So he said, "Sit outside for a minute, and I'm going to call you back in a moment." And he got called back a few minutes later, and sitting next to Chief Rabbi Hertz was Dinah Brumsky. And they said to him, we need somebody like you on our best team. We need a dyer who is not compromising in halacha. There's another story about Rabbi Grunfeld, which I heard from Rav Cohn Shlita, who was asked to give the Hesped for King George VI in 1952.
Yeah.
King George VI died on the 6th of February 1952. I only know that because I was born 6 days later. And and the United Synagogue throughout London did a big ceremony to commemorate the death and to give a Hesped to do a some sort of mourning ceremony. And there were very few Rabbonim who were able to speak English so eloquently like Dinah Grunfeld. So he was asked to deliver the Hesped, but they wanted to have an organ playing in the synagogue. And he did not want the synagogue to be emulating the churches of Chukasem Lo Selechu. So he said, I'm sorry, I can't officiate unless the organ is not played, and he had his way. So he may have been labeled as extreme, but what he wanted to do was keep to the halacha. Well, But what do we mean sometimes when people do things extreme? I know a case of a fellow who had a very serious car accident. So much so that his car, with his wife, with his daughter, overturned, and they managed to get through it unscathed. They were not harmed. And he felt as though God was sending him some message that he had to do something really significant. So he took it upon himself to go and learn in Kollel for 2 years. Now, whether that was the right thing to do or not as a response to that, it's not for me to say. But sometimes people have this inclination that they have to go to a much further limit to what others do in order to achieve a certain goal. And somebody came along once to Dine Aaron Troy and said to him that he was in a terrible car accident and he managed to get out of it okay. So he wanted to take upon himself a vow that when he walks in the street, he will never ever look at a woman. He'll just put his head down the whole time. And Dine Aaron Troy said to him, you're not going to be able to keep to that. There's no way you can manage to keep to that. So don't do it. Don't take it. So he said, yeah, but I want to do something really, really significant as a thanks and recognition to God that I was saved from this accident. So Dinah Troy said to him, well, when you bench after a meal, make sure you read the words from your siddur or your bencher. Don't bench by heart. That's what you should take on yourself. You know, keep it steady. Or as my mother used to say, don't get too yomtov dick. Or the Rambam writes, Al tehid tzadik harbe, as a quote from Shlomo HaMelech. Well, if we look at the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, and what does he say? In the third chapter, he says, perhaps a person will say that because there are such evil things in the world, like jealousy and lust and honor, kinotai v'kovod, which are all bad things, and they destroy a person, I will separate from the world completely until I will not allow myself any worldly pleasures, like I won't drink wine, I won't eat meat, I won't marry a woman, and I won't have a nice household or zira, a nice flat, and I won't wear any nice clothes, but I will sit in sackcloth and ashes on the floor like the priests of the non-Jews do. So Rambam says, Gamzed derech rohi, this is an evil way. You're not allowed to do this. And the person who goes along that route is called a chote, he is a sinner. And he compares it to the nozir. The nozir who denies himself the wine, that is called a chote. Alright, if you don't like wine, or you might have health reasons not to drink wine, but a person who denies himself permitted things is called a sinner. And what is about the nozir? The nozir has to bring a korban chatos after he finishes his 30 days of nazirus. He brings a sin offering. Why? Because he has committed the crime of denying himself a worldly pleasure which Hashem allows. And he has to do kapara. So the Rambam says, so if that's the case, then someone who denies himself all kinds of things, alachas kama v'chama. So obviously if it's for health reasons you want to deny yourself meat or wine or something like that, fine. But somebody who makes a principle out of it to deny himself pleasures, just stop doing those things which the Torah forbids you. And don't make extra nadorim and shavuos and things which are allowed. It's not enough, says the Chachomim, that you... The Torah forbade you, but you're going to add to that, make extra chumras unnecessarily. Obviously, if a person feels he's got to make his own personal precautions in order that he doesn't slip into Aveira, fine. But otherwise, just to make oneself like fast the whole time, a person may not do that sort of thing. They made a takana of times when you fast, and that's good enough. So on that, Shlomo HaMelech said, Alti Tzadik Harbeh. So that's why the Rambam makes this point about taking the middle road. That this is the general approach. But there are some people who tend to take this perhaps a little bit in the wrong way. What does that mean? So Rabbi Leibovitz once said in the name of Rabbi Twersky, he said, there are people who take this Rambam the wrong way. The people who take this Rambam say, you take the middle road, you're a moderation. Moderation, okay, I don't ever do it. I'm a frum Jew, I go to the shul on Saturday morning, that's good enough. You know, my children go to Chayda, we do sidering on Pesach. I'm a good Jew. So they say, well, I've got the Rambam. The Rambam says, I need to be in moderation. You mustn't go too much to the one way or too much to the other way. Although the Rambam does say that when a person is someone who's very angry, then he should perhaps bend the other way. It's like walking on the tightrope, that when you're a bit about to lose your balance or having leaned a bit too much to the right, then you go a bit further to the left. So that way you're going to correct yourself. That's another aspect. But he says something very interesting. He says, we mustn't be too emotional about something, or mustn't be too quiet about something, and we mustn't be too happy maybe about something, or too sad about something. What does this mean? So he says, if you read the Rambam very carefully, he is really saying that you have to be a bit of both. And what does moderation mean? It's being the coexistence of different extremes. That sometimes you have to be very serene and very calm, and sometimes you have to be very outspoken and very excited. And it depends on the circumstances of the case which one you should be. So he says, Shivisi Hashem lenegdi somid. Shivisi comes from the word shove, which means even, being balanced. So I have to be even, but in the context of Hashem always being with me. That Hashem wants me to do certain things, and those are the things that I will do, and with that I'm going to contain the shivisi, this balance. What does it mean? So he gives an example which makes it easier to understand. Yaakov Avinu, was he a quiet person, or was he an outspoken person? Was he shy, and was he introvert, or was he open and extrovert? We know that he had a big mouthful for Laban when Laban had cheated him, aseres monim, Chazal say 100 times. He says, you swindled me when it came to marriage by switching your daughters, you swindled me in the business. He really gave him a mouthful. And yet, we find in instances where Yaakov Avinu is completely quiet. We say, Hakol Kol Yaakov. The best thing is to have the voice of Yaakov. What was the voice of Yaakov? When Yosef spoke about his dreams, and the brothers were jealous, and their father could see that there was this jealousy going on, what does it say? Va'oviv shomar es hadovor. At first he said, Mo achalom azeh asheh halomto. What is this dream that you've dreamt? Your mother, because he spoke about his father and his mother, or the sun and the moon and the stars, interpreted as the father and the mother, and Rachel Mesa. Moach halom hazeh asheh halom. So they found in the computer, you got the hidden words of Rachel Mesa, and not even at intervals. Hachalom hazeh asheh halom. So you got the letters of Rachel Mesa. So he objected. But then, when he spoke further, V'aviv shomar es hadovor, he kept quiet. Why didn't he say anything? And then in another example, when Dina got captured, and Shimon and Levi do this battle against Shechem, Yaakov Avinu was very upset. He says, our enemies, they're going to come and kill us. And they said to him, Hachazona Yasas Achoseinu, should our sister be treated like a harlot? He doesn't answer. There is no reply. But he does make a reply only much later in Vayechi when he's on his deathbed. Then he talks about Shimon and Levi, Achim Kelechomos, criticizing them. And another example, when Reuven switches the beds. Rudely, Reuven decides to take his father's bed and from Bilhah's room and puts it into Leah's room because he feels his mother, Leah, is being neglected. Vayishma Yisrael. Yaakov heard about it, but he didn't say anything. That was not the time to speak. So sometimes he was very vocal, and sometimes he was very silent. But in those cases we've just said when he was silent, surely he had every justification to speak up and say to someone like Reuven, could you please mind your own business? What's it got to do with you? But he was silent. Why was he silent? And it's interesting because when you look at all these examples, each one of those cases was one where the perpetrator who had caused the trouble really felt that they had a good reason for doing what they did. Right? So Yosef felt he had justification to speak about his dreams, and the brothers felt they had justification to hate him or to be jealous of him. And in the same way with Dinah being captured, Shimon and Levi felt justified what they did to protect the honor of their sister, and Reuven to protect the honor of his mother. So they felt justified. They felt they were doing the right thing. So how do you know when you're doing the right thing and when you're not doing the right thing? If what you feel like what you're doing is a mitzvah, I'm running to a shir. Let's say I'm running to give a shir. And a needy lady stops me in the street and cries that she needs help. Do I say, look, I'm sorry, I'm busy now, I've got to give a shir. Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. In fact, it happened to me once personally. When I was about to leave my house on a Friday evening to walk to North Hendon for the Friday night winter shir. And my baby son was 1 year old and was showing signs of something terribly wrong with him. And so my wife said, look, I can't go because we have another child who was a bit older. She said, go to Dr. Adler's house. And I felt like, what am I going to do? I've got to go to North Hendon and I've got to allow 20, 25 minutes to get there and I've got to give this shir. They're all going to sit there waiting for me. And I thought to myself, I have to listen to my wife. I've got no choice. I have to do it. The health of my son must come first. I have to go to the doctor. So I walked to the doctor. He came round, but I left him to do what he did and everything was okay. And then I walked to North Hendon and I was terribly late. And guess what happened? There was Gershon Hepner ably giving the shir in my place. Yes. Yep. But it was about 26 years ago. So everything was okay. They managed very well without me. Nobody is indispensable. And everything. But this is something which has to be done. So you do it. So when a person feels compelled to do something, It's extreme and unreasonably extreme to say, I'm sorry, I'm busy now, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. You're needed somewhere else. So what is the message you have to do? Not the Talmud Torah, but you have to do what is the Ratzon Hashem. What does God require of me at this very moment? Does he want me to say to the needy person, sorry, I'm busy now, I've got to give a shir? Or does he want me to do something else? There's a classic story of Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi. He lived from 1745 to 1812, a very famous Rav who wrote the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, he wrote the Tanya, and he was the founder of Chabad, and he was about to go to shul for Kol Nidre, Erev Yom Kippur, and instinctively he walked in a different direction. There was a woman who was a widow who had just given birth, and she had five other children, and she was sitting in the cold. He went into the forest and he chopped firewood. When the whole community was waiting for him in the shul for Kol Nidre, he was busy chopping firewood and he went around to her and on Yom Kippur he lit the fire because there was a newborn baby there and there was a danger to life, and he stayed with her and the shul wondered, what shall we do? The Rav is not here for Kol Nidre. That was Rav Shneur Zalman of Lodi. And it's very tempting for people to say, look, that's not my job. You want me to do this and that and the other. What does Hashem want from me? And when Yaakov Avinu had these periods of silence, he knew that that was not the right time to speak. He had to be quiet. Only later on his deathbed he gave his rebukes. So it's all very well saying that Talmud Torah comes first, but Talmud Torah is really just an expression of Ratzon Hashem, what Hashem wants from me. So that is what we talk about balance. That's what we're talking about when we talk about extremes. How do we achieve that balance? Now, I did find in Halacha a number of cases where there's an expression ma'od ma'od. Or as the Hasidim would say, ma'oid ma'oid. Or as the Yekuts would say, ma'aud ma'aud. Ma'od ma'od means extreme. Very much. There are certain times in Halacha when you are told to be extreme. And there are not many instances where you got this expression in Halacha. But there are very few, but very significant ones. So, what is the most important one? It says in Pekei Avos, Heve Shafal Ruach, Ma'od Ma'od, extremely, you shall be humble. So, Pekei Avos, Perek Beis, Mishnah Dalet, one shall be extremely modest and humble in one's ways. So there the words are used, Ma'od Ma'od. Be extreme. So when you're asked by somebody, are you extreme? On that particular score, you have to try to be extreme, because the halacha says, ma'od ma'od. And I found another example. The Tur, in Siman Kuf Samach, in Choshen Mishpot, he says, ma'od ma'od, a person should be very careful, odom lezayah be'isur ribbit. When it comes to paying interest on a loan, or taking interest, one must be very careful not to indulge in the taking of interest. Why? Because you can get two people that say, look, we can make a deal with each other. I'm quite happy to pay you the interest in order to get the loan. And the fellow says, I'm quite happy to take the interest in order to give it to you, because otherwise I'll spend the money somewhere else. So they feel as though they're not doing anything wrong, because they've made a mutual agreement. But what does Chazal tell us? That people who engage in ribbis are not zochet to tchias hamesim. That's how serious ribbis is. When I told this to somebody else, he said, then why do Chazal allow a heteriska? Because you're getting round it. Isn't surely a device? If you've got to be so careful about ribbis, then why did Chazal allow heteriska? Well, we discussed heteriska just a few months ago, to show that what is happening is not really ribbis at all. It is partnership, and it's an arrangement, and it's perfectly legitimate. So there the halacha is saying, yes, it's okay, but simple ribbis on its own, ma'od, ma'od, very much you have to be extreme, and you have to be careful to make sure you don't indulge in it whatsoever. Another example I found in Shulchan Aruch, Chachmas Odom brings it down in Kuf Chaf Hei, Tzarech Odom Nisrachek Mehanoshim Ma'od Ma'od. When what should one be extreme? One should try as much as possible to keep away, without any suggestion of being derogatory towards women, we keep away from them. Why? Because they're a distraction. And it's very easy to slip and fall into immoral ways if, for example, one breaks the dinim of Yichud. So Chazal were meticulous in creating these precautionary measures in order that a person doesn't fall into the trap of immorality. So there you've got another example of Ma'od Ma'od. I also found in the Tur in Siman Shim number 12 in Yeredeah, it talks about Bikacholim, and there it talks about the duties of a doctor. The Rofe Vuhushe Yezayah Ma'od Ma'od. A person shouldn't say, oh well, God is the doctor. He's Rofe Nemon Rachamon. I leave it up to God to do the recovery. And yeah, okay, I'll make a prescription and so on. But the doctor has a duty, Verapo Yerape, that the power is given to human doctors to do what is necessary. And there the expression is used, Ma'od Ma'od. So there are very few examples where you actually find in Shulchan Aruch or Torah this expression. And you might say to me, well, why isn't Ma'od Ma'od written by Taras HaMishpacha, Hilchas Shabbos? Actually, if you do look in some other places, you do get this Ma'od Ma'od in some other sources. I found in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, in the Piskei Asidur, Ma'od Mod Soichel Izai Badlokas Neiros, lighting the Shabbos candles, because it's very easy, if one delays things, that one will light after sunset, and then one will be breaking Shabbos, and therefore you have to be careful, Ma'od to light early enough. And there is another example, actually, in the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchot Shechita, that the Shochet, before he performs his duties, he has to be ma'od, very careful to check the sharpness of his knife. I've even heard once of a shochet who would check the sharpness of his knife with his tongue. Well, I don't think that's the right way. I think that's a bit extreme, but otherwise you'll be calling Hatzolah. But before the actual Shechita, so there are certain things you have to be very, very careful about. And Aruch HaShulchan uses this expression about a dozen times in other places. In one, he talks about Avas Hashem. He talks about the sofer being very careful about the way he writes his letters. He talks about not eating too much on a Friday because it's an insult to Shabbos, and Kovod HaShabbos is something you have to be careful, ma'od. And in another example, he talks about the third meal of Shabbos, ma'od. And another example in Shin Samach Vov, he talks about Lezayim Medivrei Sofrim, to make sure that you keep to the Takonos of Chazal, and there he also uses the expression ma'od, and there are one or two other places. So you might ask, well, why is it that these ma'od are not written by, say, a woman going to mikveh, or you know, paying taxes correctly? Why, you know, dinner de malchus adina? Why is it you don't find ma'od in these places? It seems that the examples that we were talking about were ones where not are the most important halachas, but ones where people slip very easily, where people fall into a trap very easily. So we spoke about immorality or ribbis, and also, of course, humility. Those are ones where it's very easy to take the wrong path without too much concentration. And that's why Ma'od Ma'od is written. But really, one should be careful in all forms of halachas, in all kinds of ways. So, one or two other examples. The Aruch HaShulchan talks about the Afikoman. Yeah, right, you're supposed to eat the Afikoman before Chatzos, but if you eat so much in your meal in the Seder night, you won't have any appetite left for your Afikoman. So he uses there the expression Ma'od Ma'od. Or he talks about visiting the sick in Shin Lamed Hei. One should be very careful to visit the sick. When my mother, Rav Shalom, was Nifta, Rabbi Cooper said one small point about her. It was in the month of Nisan. He said, I can't really give a hesped in the month of Nisan, but I just want to give people a bit of Musa. And he spoke about my mother. He said, when other people were complaining that their car was in for service so they couldn't visit somebody in hospital, he said, Mrs. Pick was standing at the bus stop waiting for the bus in order to visit these people in hospital. So that's the expression ma'od ma'od. Eben Oezer talks about to marry a respectable woman. Ma'od ma'od, be careful. Although I must say, I was sitting on a plane some months ago, and I was looking at a sefer called Ketzef HaShemesh U'Gvuroso, and it said something in there which made me almost fall on the floor with laughter, but I was wearing a seatbelt, so it didn't happen. And he says something from the Pele Yoetz, which was remarkable. And if we're talking about the words, are you extreme, this must beat them all. He says that if a person has a really nasty wife, then that person will go straight to Olam Haba. If a person has a nagging wife, then that person is zoche to the world to come. So he writes that if a person is able to, if a person has the stamina for it, he should choose a wife who's really a nasty shrew in order that he gets out of my bar. Remarkable. I've never seen anything written like this before. So I told this to my son, Danny, and he said to me, Daddy, haven't you heard the story about the guy who decides to try and find a really nasty wife? So he finds a girl who's really horrible, she's really nagging, she's really nasty, so he marries her, because that way I'm going to get out of my bar. And then after he marries her, she's suddenly so nice to him. She's so sweet. She's not nagging him. So he says to her, I thought you were a nasty person. I thought that you were going to be a nagger. She said, I don't want you to get your Olam HaBa. Well, there is another Rambam which is worth looking at, and that's at the very end of Hilchos Teshuva. When we're talking about are you extreme and the extremities of Yiddishkeit, I think this is a very relevant piece to look at in context of Avas Hashem. And there, in the 10th Perek of Hilchos Teshuva, he talks in Hilchos Yisodat about love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and how do you attain deep love, after Hashem Elokecho, b'chol levavecho, b'chol nafshecho, b'chol nozecho. So he says you study the Bria, you study creation, and you study the intricacies of creation and how everything is done with intelligent design. That way you come to Avas Hashem. But then in actually describing what are the limits of Avas Hashem, he said, the case study or Ava Haruya who she Avas Hashem, Ava Gadolu Yisera, how do you fulfill this mitzvah of V'afto Es Hashem Elokecho, V'chol Mevovecho, V'chol Nafsho, V'chol Modecho? He says, until you're really tied up with it in the love of God, that you are constantly in this mindset. He says it's like a person who is almost mentally sick from his infatuation with a woman. And he's thinking about this woman constantly, whether he's sitting down or standing up, when he's sitting down to his meals, when he's working, he's always thinking about this woman. This is his infatuation. That is an indication of how a person should be when it comes to Avas Hashem. Remarkable. Yes, him is a tear, Avas Hashem, believe of Shonim Batomid, that it's constantly on his mind, Shetivonu b'chol levovecho v'chol nafshecho. And as Chazal say, why is there two base instead of one base? Levovecho, you love with your Yetzer Tov, and you love with your Yetzer Ra. And he brings the Shlomo HaMelech on this derech, Moshe Kicholos Ava Oni. And the whole of Shir HaShirim is basically a love story, which is a moshul on the way we will be behaving in our love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there, you've got an infatuation which anybody might call extreme. But that is the modest, moderation way of performing Avas Hashem. There's another interesting example. The favor of the Rosh Yeshiva. And that is the Seder of B'chukosai. It says, in B'chukosai teleichu. If you go along in my statutes, and my statutes give me Gishmei Shem B'itom, you'll get all the brachas and all the blessings and so on and so forth. So the Rashi Yeshiva love, and the Mashgiach love talking about this phrase. Why? Because Rashi says, Shetiyu Amelim B'Torah. You shall be steeped in Torah. And the Aruch Chaim gives 48 explanations, and you can make one shiur about every one, so it'll take you a whole year to give all these shiurim. So I found an interesting explanation. How do you understand Shetiyu Amelim Torah coming out of the words in B'chukosai Teleichu? So the Sefer Matnas Moshe, a Rav Zaks, a Dayanon of Beis Din in Yerushalayim, he says it says Teleichu when you're going. The indication of Amelim comes from this word going, walking. How so? He says it's very nice when you sit down to your kaviyas, you have a shiur for half an hour, you have your daf yomi, your amelim b'torah, but then you get up, you close your sefer, and then you go off and you do your business and your shopping and go to golf and so on and so forth. So he says amelim b'torah means when you close your gemara, when you close that sefer and you walk away, you're still thinking about it. You're still discussing it. You're pondering over what you had been learning. So that when you're doing mundane things, like cooking in the kitchen, or sweeping the floor, or driving your car, that you are still thinking about your Torah. That is what Amelim means. So you say, oh, is that extreme? No, that's what Hashem requires from us. That's Tavo Torah. But if you have to do your parnosi, you've got to go to work, you've got to earn your livelihood, then that is Rotzon Hashem. So then you will have to put your mind to doing whatever you're doing. So we've got now, tomorrow evening, Tisha B'Av, and we can connect something we've been saying to that as well. Now in the 9 days, we're in a mournful period, and yet, nevertheless, we know from the Pasuk, we should always be happy. Tachas Hashem le'avatos Hashem b'simcha. So it says in the Tochacha that you're punished if you haven't been always in simcha. Nevertheless, we now are in a mournful period. So are we happy or are we sad? When I was sitting in Avelus for my father, Zechrono Lebracha, it was just at that time that my daughter got engaged. So I was in a very happy mood, but I was in a very sad mood. And it was a very strange combination. And there was an insistence from different parts of the family that the engagement vote has to be straight away. And I felt like, well, why can't we wait till after the Shloshim? And the pressure was on. In fact, we had it 2 days after the Shiva because Chassan had to go back to Yerushalayim and so on. So we've got this thing in Koheles, Lakol Zaman. If I just find it, I've got Koheles here. Chapter 3. Gimel. Thank you. There's a time for everything. A time to give birth, a time to die, so on, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to cure, and so on, a time to demolish, a time to build, a time to cry, a time to laugh. So everything has its allotted time. So we were talking earlier about not that we interpret the Rambam as the middle road, as being I'm the moderating Jew who goes to shul once a week. That is not what is meant. It's meant when the Torah says, or when the Rambam says, take the middle path, it means take both extremes but create a balance between them. But there are times when you have to be quiet, like Yaakov Avinu, and times when you have to be outspoken. So there are times when you are both extremes, and not simply what you say, moderation. You have to have a time for everything. Eis lahashlech avonim, eis kenos avonim, eis lachbot ve'eis lirchot mechabek. A time when you might hug and not hug. Eis levakish ve'eis labed, eis lishma ve'eis lashlech. But there's one interesting phrase here, which doesn't have the lamud. It says, eis safod ve'eis rakod. So you've got eis la for lots of things, to do something, but eis sefod, the eis rakod, at the end of Pasuk Dalod of chapter 3. So, the Rosh Yeshiva of Shari Torah, who was at the Vort, said to me this piece. He said, you are in a situation where you are both happy and sad. So that is why there's no lamud there. Eis sefod ve'eis rakod, a time to give a hesped and a time to be dancing happily. And those two might be happening at exactly the same time. And you might be extreme in those measures, but they're happening simultaneously. So he said to me, that's why in the posuk for eis sefod ve'eis rakod there is no lamud, because there are times when you're doing both. So as we prepare tomorrow for Tisha B'Av, and we are in a very mournful situation, and a person who doesn't mourn for Jerusalem will not be zoche to see it rebuilt. So we sit down on the floor, and we have our ashes, and we are mourning, and we are fasting, but we're happy people because we're happy to do with the Ratzon Hashem. How do we reconcile those two, that we're extreme in both? There's a story, a famous story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, whose wife had just died. And he was in the hospital, and he didn't want to meet anybody whom he knew, so he did not use the lift. So he was coming out of Shari Tzedek Hospital, he decided to use the staircase, even though it was many flights of stairs. And as he came down two or three flights, he met one of his Talmudim. And his Talmud, his pupil, was so glad to see him. He said, Rebbe, Rebbe, my wife has just given birth to a baby daughter. And he said, wow, Mazel Tov. And his face lit up and was shining. And he shook his hand and hugged him and said, that's really wonderful news. He was so happy. His wife had died 10 minutes before. When this Talmud found out that his Rebbe had just lost his wife, he was so embarrassed. He came to the Shiva and he said, Rebbe, I ask you for mechila. I ask you for forgiveness. I had no idea. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said to him, you don't have to apologize. So what? You were not meant to know. And what's it got to do one thing with the other? You've got a great simcha. You've got your first child. That's a great reason to be happy. And I'm rejoicing with you. The fact that my wife had just died, yes, okay, that's a sad event. But I can be both extremes. I can be extremely sad and I can be extremely happy for you. And that is the correct derech. It's a very interesting method of Yiddishkeit, which people do get wrong when they look at this Rambam who talks about taking the middle path. They think it means, oh, I mustn't be extreme. Well, obviously, you don't walk many miles on Shabbos to go to a Naturi Karta demonstration against the State of Israel. That's not called extremism. That's called evil. You know, when Islamic extremists do something terrible and murderous, that's not called extremism. That's murderous. Let's get the terminologies right. But there are times when you have to be very vocal and you have to be very silent, when you have to be very happy and very sad. So on Tisha B'Av, we call the day Moed. It's a day of extremes. We're not going to say Tachanun this week on Tuesday, but it's the saddest day of the Jewish calendar. But we call it Moed. Once when I was Oven and I was standing at the Omad on Tisha B'Av, and the Rav came in and said, you can't daven. Today is a Moed. Today is a Yom Tov. Can you believe that? Tisha B'Av, the saddest day of the Jewish calendar, is also the happiest day, as it will be in the future, because we have hope. And that hope is that Mashiach should come very soon, speedily in our days. Thank you very much.